How are you guys tonight? Are you good? I've missed you. And we are getting to start a new series tonight called Reset. And by the way, how many of you are happy the snow finally showed up? That's about 13 of you. Well, all this snow this week, I was watching my kids. My kids were just, it was almost as if this was the first time they'd ever seen snow. They were so excited. And it got me thinking about my first snowmobile experience. It was about 10 years ago, and I was with a good friend of mine. We were up in the really far north, up in Minnesota. We were like right on the border of like Minnesota and Canada. And I'll never forget it. I was really excited. This would be the first time I'm ever getting on a snowmobile in my life. And so we're out, you know, we're having this great time, and my friend, he's real experienced snowmobiler, so he's telling me all, you know, give me all these tips and everything else. And we're having such a great time that we sort of lose track of time. And before we realize it, several hours had gone by. We were getting low on gas and it was getting dark. No big deal because I'm with a professional, sort of. And so we pull over. We find this spot to pull over because we're going to look at a map and figure out where we're at and get some gas and whatever. So we pull over. We look at the map. We figure out where we want to go. And we get back on our snowmobiles. And right as we put our helmets on, we both put our helmets on. We start our snowmobiles up. And as soon as I get my helmet on, I look up, and my friend is gone. Now, you may not think that's a big deal, okay, but what you don't know yet is that where we were at had like five different trails you could go on, and it was dark enough for me not to be able to really see it that well, and so I sort of was like, okay, this isn't good, so I shut my snowmobile off, and I listen. Nothing very dense, you know, in the snow and the woods and all of that. And so I do the only thing I know to do is I jump up on the snowmobile and I eeny meeny miny mo, and I go, okay, that one. And I go down the trail as fast as I can and literally, okay, before I even realized what was happening, something horrible happened. I got stuck on what happened was is there was buried underneath the snow was a tree that had fallen. And I rode the snowmobile right over the tree. And so I was stuck. And so I quickly jumped off of the snowmobile and tried to lift it off of the tree and hoping that somehow this would be one of those, you know how you hear those stories of people that like somehow were able to lift a car and save their family? So I was like, okay, this is going to be it, right? Because I'm starting to panic, okay? So I lift it up, try to lift it up, nothing whatsoever, wouldn't budge. And so I'm standing in the middle of freezing temperatures in the middle of the North Woods of Minnesota, now probably in Canada somewhere. I literally have no idea what to do. And so I do what every pastor would probably do in that situation. I panicked. I did. I freaked out, man. And then after I panicked, I decided I should pray. And so I prayed. And let me tell you, I prayed. You know, notice how spiritual sometimes we get when we find ourselves stuck, right? I started wheeling and dealing with God. God, I promise, I will never, what do you want? I'll never drink coffee again. Okay, I will do whatever you want. I'll go to Africa. I'll even go to Aurora. Whatever you want, okay? I was scared, man. And so finally after about, what felt like 2 or 3 hours, it was more like maybe 10 minutes, off in the distance, I hear this, wah, 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 and I'm thinking, okay, hopefully that's not a giant forest bumblebee coming at me. And lo and behold, I see my friend, well, my ex-friend, coming down the trail, and he pulls up, he sees me, and he pulls over, and he jumps off a snowmobile, and he runs over to me as fast as he can, and right as he goes to give me a big hug, I clock him. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't clock him, but I wanted to, sort of. But I was just so happy. No, I tell you what, he jumped off that snowmobile, and we hugged. I mean, I embraced a man in a way that I've never embraced him before. and he helped me. We lifted that snowmobile off, and we went on our way. You know what I learned that day? I learned that it is no fun getting stuck. It's no fun. And you know what? The same is true in our lives. When we get stuck, it is not a lot of fun, is it? You ever gotten stuck in your life? Huh? I mean, you know this is true because all of us get stuck at certain junctures in our journey of life, right? Sometimes we get stuck. Well, we get stuck emotionally, don't we? Sometimes we get stuck financially. Sometimes we get stuck, man, go down the list, right? Spiritually, we get stuck physically. We get stuck sometimes in our relationships. Sometimes we get stuck in our marriages. Sometimes we get stuck in our parenting. We get stuck in our friendships. I mean, on down the list. Sometimes we get stuck in our leadership. And see, here's the irony about being stuck. Okay, first of all, getting stuck, I'm convinced, is the easy part. I mean, think about it. It's just what happens. I mean, it's easy, okay? What's not easy is getting unstuck. It didn't take a lot of effort for me to get stuck on that tree. It took a lot of effort to get off of the tree. See, the reason I think getting unstuck is hard is because getting unstuck requires change. Change. Turn to the person next to you and say, change. Yes, change. We love change, don't we? No, we hate it. Man, change is hard. Man, our ego hates change, doesn't it? Even if whatever it is we're doing isn't working, we still hate change. We don't like it, which is why a lot of times it's easier for us to try to change other people or to pray and ask God to change our circumstances or our situation a lot easier than it is to look inside and to cooperate with the kind of change that God wants to bring us. There is a lot of resistance within us towards change, right? See, getting unstuck is hard because it requires change, and change is difficult. Getting stuck is easy. It's kind of like default, right? It's what happens when you just keep going and don't change. Everything around you is changing, but you don't change. I mean, think about this for a second. We see this everywhere. Okay, there is a reason that you see fewer and fewer Blockbuster video stores and more Redboxes, right? There's a reason for that. You know why that is? Because Blockbuster didn't change. Everything around them changed. The market changed. Technology changed. But Blockbuster didn't change, right? You know, the same, and so they got stuck. Same thing happens with churches. Churches get stuck, right? Because while culture changes and the way people relate to things, churches don't change. So churches are still trying to reach people the way they reached people 40 or 50 years ago. And so we get stuck. And you know what else? You know who else gets stuck is us, right? We get stuck in our lives. Our marriages get stuck. We get stuck in our parenting. And we get stuck in our friendships because we don't like change. And so we just, and the bottom line is, eventually what happens is we fall flat on our face, or we find ourselves facing all kinds of ultimatums. We find ourselves stuck in this really, really tough place. And I don't know why it is, but usually that's what it takes for us to finally realize we need to change. Right? We have to almost bottom out a lot of times. It's like it takes bottoming out before we wake up and really come to this realization that there are some things that we need to let go of, and there's change that we need to embrace. Sometimes it takes that. So that's what this series is all about. It's really about letting go. It's for some of us, it's going to be about unlearning habits, unlearning ways of thinking. I love this quote by Albert Einstein. He said this: no problem can be solved by the same consciousness that caused the problem in the first place. So you see, this is about, I think, understanding that if you want what you've never had, you've got to be willing to do what you've never done before. See, we get that mixed up, don't we? We do what we've always done and wonder why we don't get anything new. And so we're like hamsters, right, in the hamster wheel. We're just spinning around and around and around and around, and we're not going anywhere. And so here's the deal, all right? This series is a series about you. This is not a series. I think we should be sitting here going, I sure wish my husband was here to hear this. Or, honey, are you listening? Why are you buying me 4-shot espresso right before church? Because you need to hear what the preacher's saying tonight, right? No. So here's the thing. We're going to dive into some things over these next few weeks, and I challenge you to say, God, what are you saying to me? Not everyone else around me. What are you saying to me? And so we're going to dive into some things that I think are going to be really, really good. We're going to talk about some things that we, some areas of our lives that we get stuck in. We're going to talk about relationships. We're going to talk about money, finances. We're going to talk about how we get stuck emotionally sometimes. We're going to talk about how we get stuck by failure in our lives, and we're not able to move forward. Well, here's the thing. Tonight, I want to start with a big one. I want to start with what I think is probably a constant challenge for every one of us. And it's something we tend to think about more and more, you know, usually this time of year more than ever. But I want to talk about our time. Time. Tick, tock, tick, tock, time. Now, let me tell you something. The reason that this is important is because if you think about it, your time is your life. You ever think about that? It's true, right? When your time literally runs out, it's over. Right? You can run out of money, you can run out of friends, you can run out of food, you can run out of ideas, but once you run out of time, it's over. And so here's the thing. Today, what you're going to hear is probably not going to be so profound as much as it's going to be, I think, an opportunity to remind ourselves of some very sobering truths about our time. For example, one of the things that makes time so unique, so different from everything else in our lives, is this, okay? First of all, everyone has the same amount of it, don't they? Now, I know there's people who it seems like they have more time in their day than we do. You know, you always look at people and go, how do they do what they do, right? But everybody has the same amount of time, 24 hours in a day, right? 7 days in a week, 365 days in a year. A person, they can make more money, they can make more, I don't know, more babies, they can go on more vacations, but your allotment of time, sorry, it's inflexible. Okay, and then on top of that, here's the other sobering truth about our time. Once time goes by, there's no way to get it back. Once it goes by, it's gone. You cannot recover lost time, right? You can't save it. You can't store it up. You can't, you know, put it in a doggy bag and try to dig into it later. No. Once it's gone, it's gone. Now, in the Old Testament, Job, he understood some things about time. He said it this way. Listen to this. Job chapter 14, verse 5. Man's days are determined. You have decreed the number of his months and have set limits he cannot exceed. Catch that? Limits he cannot exceed. You can exceed, oh gosh, you can exceed in a lot of areas of life. You can exceed the speed limit. Some of you did tonight on your way to church. Shame on you. Drive more like me. Just kidding. So, you know, you can exceed, sometimes you can exceed your spending limit. You can overeat, you can overanalyze, you can overachieve, but you cannot overlive. There's a limit, and you cannot exceed your limit. And see, that's why when someone asks the question, well, man, where did the time go? You know what they're really asking? They're really asking, where did my life go? Where'd it go? Because why? Well, because your time is your life, and once you run out of time, it's gone. It's over. And that's why, listen, that's why this is an important one. That's why we need to talk about our time. It's why even the psalmist, there's this beautiful prayer that we probably should just make our own. the psalmist prayed this. In fact, I think we should pray this together. Psalm 90, verse 12. We're going to put it here on the screen, and I want us to read it together right now. No. All right. Psalm 90, verse 12. We're going to look at that a couple times, so type that in. All right. Psalm 90, verse 12. Teach us to number our days. Say it with me. Ready? Teach us to number our days. And the second part is this, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Ready? That we may gain a heart of wisdom. Now, here's the thing. One of the ways that we punch that reset button in our lives is by remembering and recognizing that our days are numbered. Do you ever think about that? You know, when we think about that sometimes when we go to a funeral service, when we hear news that someone's passed away, we think about that, don't we? That our days are numbered. And see, when you live in the reality of that, well, guess what's going to happen? You're going to live wiser. You're going to live wiser. You're going to make wiser decisions about where you're spending your time, about who you're giving your time to. My guess is that there's some of us who really need a fresh start. We feel overwhelmed. We feel stressed out. We feel like that we don't have enough time in the day to do everything we have on our agenda to do. And I know it's overwhelming. Well, here's the good news, okay? The bad news, I guess, is that you cannot add more time into your day. Right? Okay, so that's the bad news. Well, the good news is that while you might not be able to control how much time you have in terms of numbers of hours in a day or whatever, week, whatever, one thing we can do is we can make good decisions about how we use every single moment of our time. I mean, if you think about it, that's what our lives are, right? They are moments. Our lives, listen, our lives, if you add it all, our lives are a sum of what we do with all those tiny little moments that we've been given. Moments. And see, we like to think that it's about something else. We like to think that it's about those gigantic moments of our lives that will forever change and forever impact and allow us to leave this great legacy behind, right? But it's not. It's not. It's, you know what? It's about all of those tiny little moments that oftentimes seem so stinking insignificant. I mean, just take the word moment, for example. Okay, the word moment. It's an interesting word. Because the word, first of all, one of the Greek words that we get this English word moment from is the word atomos. Atomos. Okay, it's also a word that gives us the word, interestingly enough, atom, A-T-O-M, and the word atomic. I think this is very fitting. I think it's a perfect picture of what's at the core of the moments in our lives. Think about this, okay? An atom is so small. In fact, for a long time, it was believed to be the smallest unit of any element. It's tiny. And we have a bunch of those in our lives, right? Those little tiny little moments that seem just like atoms. There's a gazillion of them, and they're extremely easy to overlook. They're extremely easy to ignore, to get careless with. Sometimes they seem insignificant, like they're not a big deal. We tend to underestimate them, don't we? Which we better not do, because we also have this image of the atomic, right? The atomic, that's hidden within the moment. In other words, it may be small, but there is this extraordinary amount of potential within every single moment of our lives. And see, that's why when you live your life with great intentionality and with purpose, and with passion, and when you seize those opportunities that might seem so small and that might seem so insignificant, there is this atomic reaction that takes place that results in this divine impact. The bottom line is every moment of our life counts. And you know why ultimately that's true? Because you count. That's right. You matter. Your life matters. You may not believe that. but it matters. And so how you use every moment of your life matters. That prayer, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. It's a good prayer. Now, if you have a pen or pencil or crayon, marker, I want you to take it out. I want to give you something tonight to write down. And maybe your neighbor has one if you don't have one, or there's one in the seats or something like that. But what I want to do is I want to give you five statements to write down that I guess you could say are principles of time that I think will help us do what the psalmist prays here. Where when he says, teach us to number our days, these are five things that I think will help us. Five statements, they're things you already know, things that I know, but things that we so easily forget. And they have to do with how and what we do with those little tiny moments we've been given. So I'm going to give you those five, and then I'm going to give you an assignment to take home, okay? Here is the first statement, all right? First statement, I want you to write this down. There is cumulative value in investing small amounts of time in something over a long period of time. There is cumulative value in investing small amounts of time in something over a long period of time. A perfect example of this, exercise, right? If you exercise every day or a few times a week for 12 months or 18 months, what's going to happen? You're going to feel better, right? You're going to feel better. There's going to be an impact of that. Now, let me ask you a question, though. Are you going to notice a difference in because of you're exercising after one time? Oh, yeah, you will. You're going to be walking around hurting, right? Oh, man, what's wrong? I'm exercising. I'm miserable, right? No, you feel worse, right? But are you going to notice the impact of exercise in a positive way after one or two times, huh? Are you going to? No, absolutely not. No, there's going to be no difference after that first session, which is why, by the way, it's so easy to talk ourselves out of it. I mean, think about it. If after the first time you exercise, you looked in the mirror and you looked amazing, you'd be like, holy smokes, I'm going to do that again. It'd be super easy to do it a second time or third time, fourth time. But you don't, which is why it's so easy not to do it. See, the real value of exercise is anything, playing a musical instrument, developing as an artist, learning new skills in your life, whatever it is, it's not found in just one single deposit of your time or in a single moment of your life. No. The value is found down the road, right? After several consistent deposits of time. There is cumulative value in investing small amounts of time in something over a long period of time. In other words, it is the consistent incremental investments of time that make a difference in our lives. I mean, that's true in any part of your life. How about in your relationship with God? Don't you think having consistent times of solitude and silence and prayer and meditation and listening to God, consistent times, even if it's just a small bit of time every day or a few times a week, whatever it might be, that's going to make a difference in your spiritual journey? How about in your family? Huh? I mean, small amounts of time given consistently, those dinners with your family, investing in your children. How about in your marriage? Huh? I mean, let's say, and look, if you've had children, man, that can be hard on your marriage. People don't always tell you that, but man, and it's not because the children are little demons. I mean, sometimes, not that mine are, I'm just saying some of yours I heard are, but no, but let's just say you had children and over time you started noticing that you're feeling distant from each other. I think that's pretty normal. That happens. And so you decide, you know what, we're going to commit to dating. We're going to date. We're going to just be together, just the two of us. We can make it if we try. Anyway, no, here's the thing. You said, we're going to do date night. Let me ask you something. Are you going to notice a difference after one date night? Well, actually, maybe. But probably not. If you stay consistent and you keep giving those moments of time, eventually you'll see a difference. Why is that? Well, because of what we just said. There is cumulative value in investing small amounts of time in something over a long period of time. All right? You get that? You following me? All right. Thank you. Here's the next one. There are rarely any immediate consequences for neglecting those single installments of time in any area of life. I just think about that. You neglect your health for one day, probably not a big deal. You neglect it for a week, probably not a huge deal. How about in your relationships? You neglect one date night, probably not a big deal. You neglect two or three, maybe still not a big deal. How about your job? You miss one day of work, probably not a big deal. How about with your kids? You miss a few nights of dinner or whatever with your kids or being home, probably not a big deal. Why? Because, listen, there are rarely any immediate consequences for neglecting those single installments of time in any area of our lives. But if it becomes a pattern, then eventually there's going to be a problem because, here's the next one, because of this, neglect has a cumulative effect. Neglect has a cumulative, I'm going to get that word down, has a cumulative effect. Neglect does. I mean, think about that for a second. If you decided, you know what, starting tomorrow, I'm going to neglect my children for 1 year. We're going to have a problem. Right? Or if you said, okay, my New Year resolution is to neglect, I'm going to neglect my health for the next 12 to 18, maybe 24 months. And all I'm going to do is eat fast food. You're going to have a problem. Have you seen Supersize Me? Mm-hmm. Morgan Spurlock eats nothing but McDonald's for a month. Messes him up, man. He eats McDonald's 3 times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. He gets addicted to it. I mean, within a week, he gains like 10 pounds and he starts feeling depressed and becomes lethargic and massive headaches, and the only thing that cures him is going and getting more McDonald's. Oh. See, here's the thing. You can neglect your health for a week, I don't know, a month, without probably many serious consequences, but you neglect it for 20 years. Well, there's going to be problems, right? See, it's never about the one time, is it? It's never about the skipping out the one time or whatever. No, the effect is cumulative, isn't it? When the neglect piles up, so do the consequences. That's the same in every area of our lives, physically, emotionally, man, and spiritually, financially, in every area of our lives. So here's the thing. While it's true that small, consistent investments of time, they can add up to good things. And the constant neglect adds up to bad things. Here's what else is true, all right? This is huge. There is no cumulative value to the urgent things that we allow to interfere with the important things. Let me say that again. Rewind. There is no cumulative value to the urgent things that we allow to interfere with the important things. Oh, man, listen. Here's the crazy thing. People don't always think about this. All the random things that tend to interrupt what's really important in our lives usually add up to nothing. Usually add up to nothing. For example, I mean, let's just say that you have this New Year's resolution of getting healthy. And so you decide you're going to start working out. You're gonna start eating better. You join a health club, and you're gonna, you know, all that, and you even decide, you know what? I need to be held accountable, so I'm gonna pull all my friends together. I'm gonna let them know what's going on. So you pull all your friends together. I want you guys to hold me accountable, all right? And this year is the year. It's the year, all right? And so let's just say, and this is highly unlikely, but let's just say it didn't quite work out. Okay, and so for whatever reason, things just kept interfering with it. And so your friends who you told them to hold you accountable say, okay, listen, so imagine like sitting down with your friends and having to explain why, what did you do instead of exercising? And so you're sitting there and they're asking you, what did you do instead of exercising? And you, it's just a lot of stuff and things that were going on, man. Okay, did you sleep in? Sometimes, yeah. Well, what else did you do? Well, I had to get to the office early. A lot going on. What'd you do at the office? I don't remember. A lot of stuff. things there in Facebook, different things in the morning that you got to do, right? See, look, the point is this. Look, if you stacked up all the stuff that you did instead of exercising and then added up the value of that, you know what it would equal out to? Zero, 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 zero. Okay, all the random pursuits that we allow to interrupt what's truly important in our lives usually adds up to what? Nothing. Nothing. Except for maybe wasted time. All right, there's never any cumulative value to all the urgent. This is so important. And so, honey, I'm not going to be able to make it home for dinner tonight. And sorry, because I can't be at your thing. There's no cumulative value to the urgent things that we allow to interfere with the important things. Urgent is not the same thing as important. People try to make their urgencies your urgencies. They're not the same. All right, here's the difference. Urgent is something we react to, right? Atomic diaper. You react to that quickly. Right? Fire alarm going off. You react quickly. Caillou comes on TV. You react quickly. Shut it off. Urgent, man. Important is what? Here's the difference. Important are things that we pursue. Why? Well, because of the kind of results that it produces in our lives. Big difference. Important is something that contributes to what matters most in your life. Your values, your mission, important is what contributes to those things. Now see, here, and the worst part about it is, going back to something I said earlier, it's not just about wasting time or opportunities, it's about wasting your life, which leads us to the last thing I want you to write down is this, right? Ready? In the critical arenas of life, you cannot make up for lost time. In the critical arenas of life, you cannot make up for lost time. What are those critical arenas of life? Do you know, for most of us, what those are? Is people, right? Relationships. People that we love. And we all know that you can't make up for lost time in a relationship. I mean, if you miss the opportunities, you have lost them. They're gone, right? And you might be able to procrastinate all semester long and then somehow cram the night before and pass your final. But you cannot make up for lost time in the most important arenas of life. I mean, and if you think about it, why do we think we can do that? I mean, it'd be like dad one night rushing home, you know, feeling bad that he hasn't had dinner with the family in 3 months and saying, okay, family, listen, tonight, everybody, okay, we're going to go to all of our favorite restaurants tonight, all of them, and we're going to make up for lost time. What? That sounds ridiculous, right? But really, it's no different than thinking like that maybe this longer vacation can make up for the absentee parent. Or that this somehow like a romantic getaway can make up for years of marital neglect. As if one romantic weekend can somehow transform a marriage that's been neglected for year after year after year after year. Look, in the critical arenas of life, you cannot make up for lost time. Great relationships are built on what? They're built on small, consistent deposits of time. Man, the things that you do at home and the rhythms of your everyday life outweigh those big things that you think are going to make a bigger impact. They outweigh them. And so the best thing I think that we can do is make this an area of our lives that we constantly come back to the truth about and that we continually ask ourselves hard questions about. I think it means looking at what we're doing in the everyday rhythms of our life and what we're doing in those small, tiny, insignificant moments and asking yourselves, what am I doing with them? What am I doing with those moments? Am I giving the best part of my day to the things that matter most? I mean, man, what if you ask that question of yourself once a week, once a month? Am I giving the best part of my day, my week, my month to the things that are most important in my life? I want to close with a passage of scripture found in Ephesians chapter 5. Paul writes this, Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15. We have that one? We got it. All right. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise. Making the best use of the time, because the days are what? Evil. I love make the most of your time. That's like the word there, the Greek term is like this accounting term. And so in a way, it's like Paul is saying, get the full value out of your time. All right, get the full value out of your time. Squeeze out all the good you can out of every single moment of your life. Make the most of it because, look, you can't go back once it's gone. Make the best use of your time. Why? Because the days are evil. Don't think evil like, you know, Satan or country music evil, okay? This is much more subtle here, okay? You know what he's saying? Look, this is he's saying evil means just like, look, there's a draw in our lives towards things that aren't important. There's a draw in our lives towards things that have absolutely no eternal value whatsoever. Don't get stuck giving the best part of your life to those things. Don't get stuck. Because look, if you don't, you know what's going to happen? Your time will get consumed and fragmented by a million urgent, disconnected things, maybe even good things, which are not the same as great things, are they? Good does not equal great. Can I tell you, this is an area of life that I have had to work really hard at. I mean, it's a constant struggle for me. You know, that's why as the orchard has grown, we were, you know, had 300 people attending, and then 400 and 500 and 700 and 900 and 1,000 and 1,100, you know, this has been a constant struggle, not just because of the pace of what happens here, but because I love what I do. And man, if you have a job like that where you love what you do, I mean, I get paid to do what I love to do. That's awesome, man. But you know what? That's a blessing and a curse. It is, isn't it? You know what I'm saying? I mean, because here's what I know. At the end of the day, who cares? If I've built a great church, or if you've built a great, fill in the blank, what is it you're building, a business or whatever it might be? Who cares if you've done that, if you failed to lead your family? Or if you fail to leave a legacy through your children, or to those people that you are pouring your life into, so what? Man, and so one of the things, a decision that I made a long time ago was that I'm going to do everything I can to never sacrifice my family for the sake of God's work. You know, and see, you justify these things in ministry because it's God's work, right? I mean, so it's good. It's God's blessing it, whatever. No, come on. And so that's why, you know, I said if I ever have to choose between church or family, man, family is going to win. They're going to win, all right? And I'll tell you, that's not easy to do, because that means you got to say no a lot. Man, you got to say no to a lot of things, even things you'd love to do, right? I mean, and that's why, man, I can't go to everything that happens in the church anymore. I can't meet with every person who wants to meet with me. It's impossible, right? And people don't always understand. People get aggravated at that. But that's okay. It's okay. Because here's what I know, and I hope here's what you know. Okay, listen, at the end of the day, when my kids are growing up, when my kids have moved on with their life, the church, people, needs, opportunities, they'll all still be there. They'll be there. My kids, no. And they'll be gone. And I'll never get back the moments I have today. You will never get back the moments you have today. Look carefully how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise. Making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Here's an assignment. As you go home, as you start your week, I want you to just think about the most important things in your life. Even in the process of that, you may discover there's things that you have said are important that really aren't, or things that are important, or whatever it might be, okay? But I want you to think about the most important areas of your life, and I want you to ask a very simple question about those areas. And it's a question that I think will help you to hit that pause button and in turn hit that reset button. Here's the question. What is one thing I can begin doing in the most important areas of my life that would have a positive cumulative effect? What is one thing? Don't try to come up with a list of five things. Just what is one thing? One thing. What is one small investment that I could make in the most important areas of my life that one day I'll be able to look back on and say, that was worth the investment of my time. That was worth it. And I think what you can begin doing is looking at, like, even physically, relationally, school, work, family, children, whatever it might be, spiritually. What can I be? What's one thing that will have this growing effect and value? For some of us who are married, yours might be, you know what, I'm gonna go one, maybe you have no date night, you've been on a date in 12 years or something. You know, if you need help remembering how to go on a date, let Larry know, because he's pretty good at dating his wife. He's back there in the back. Make a line. But maybe for some of you who are married, you say, you know, I'm going to start date night once a week, once a month. Maybe for some of you who have children, you know what? It's starting a tradition, a weekly or monthly tradition. Maybe spiritually, it's saying, you know what? I'm going to start giving 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day to a spiritual practice. And if that is for you, a great resource is to go back to our rhythm series, where we talked about rhythms in our life, spiritual rhythms. Maybe as a leader, you're a leader and you've gotten stuck as a leader. I understand that. And so maybe for you as a leader, it's saying, okay, you know what? I'm going to give a little bit of my time every week to just break away and get to that 30,000-foot view again. I'm going to give myself, I'm going to listen to a podcast on leadership, or I'm going to read a book on leadership. I'm just going to give myself a small, one thing. What is one thing that I can begin doing in the most important areas of my life that would have this positive cumulative effect? Listen, imagine being able to look back at this next season of your life with little or no regret. Not because of one single day or like this big burst of energy, but because of a single decision to get the full value out of your time by making small incremental investments of time in the things that matter most. Let's pray.